Okay, it's September 29th and it's study night, and we have been looking at the topic of diligently seeking God. And tonight we're going to look at what God says about Noah, because we've been in Hebrews 11, and let's go to Hebrews 11. Hebrews 11, our key verse that we've been looking at is verse 6. And if everybody is muted, once everybody is muted, I would like you to say out loud, from memory, if possible, Hebrews 11, 6. But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. Okay? So right after that great statement, it talks about Noah. Prior to the statement, it talked about Abel and Enoch, both of whom got a good report from God. And then in verse 7, it says, by faith, by believing, Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, moved with fear, prepared an ark to the saving of his house, by the which he condemned the world, and became heir of the righteousness which is by faith or by believing. So everything Noah did, he did by believing. He believed what God told him. And we're going to look at the record in Genesis regarding Noah in a little while. But first I want to look at this verse and what this verse says about him, because this is in the context of diligently seeking God. And Noah was one that diligently sought God. So by believing, Noah being warned of God. Now, to be warned of God, it's interesting that being warned of God, those four words come from a Greek word, kremetizo. The word God is not in the Greek here, but it's implied. The word kremetizo means to utter an oracle, to divinely intimate, to constitute a firm for business, that is, in the genitive, bears a title, be called, be admonished, warned of God, reveal, or speak. Sometimes these definitions sound very technical, but in this context, it's that God told Noah about something that was going to happen and something that it was very important for him to do. This word, kremetizo, it's translated being warned of God, is also used in chapter 8, chapter 8, verse 5. And this is regarding Moses and how God gave him revelation regarding the tabernacle and how to build it. Verse 5 says, who serve unto the example and shadow of heavenly things, as Moses was admonished of God. Okay, in Hebrews 11, 7, it was being warned of God. Here it's translated being admonished of God. When he was about to make the tabernacle, for see, saith he, that thou make all things according to the pattern showed to thee in the mount. So God showed Moses a pattern. And it talks about the heavenly tabernacle as well as the one that's upon earth. So God showed Moses what the heavenly tabernacle looked like, and he was supposed to pattern the earthly tabernacle after the heavenly one. Okay? He gave him revelation by pictures and by words, specific words describing every part that would go into it. This being admonished of God, it was important for Moses to do it exactly as he was shown. And God told him, make sure you do it this way. It's also used in Matthew chapter 2. It's used twice in Matthew chapter 2. Matthew 2 in verse 12. This is regarding the Magi that saw his star in the rising, and they came to Jerusalem to ask where he was that was born king of the Judeans. And they talked to King Herod there, and then the King Herod, he asked his scribes, where is the Messiah supposed to be born? And they said, in Bethlehem. So he told the Magi to go to Bethlehem and do homage to this king that was born, and then to come back and let him know exactly where he was so that he could go and worship him also. Of course, his plan was to kill the child, not to worship him. But they found Jesus, and they did homage to him. And in verse 12 it says, "And being warned of God in a dream that they should not return to Herod, they departed into their own country another way." So they were warned of God to do this. Now, it's not the kind of warning like, remember, Lost in Space, the robot would say, "Warning, warning, Will Robinson," you know, like there's danger. It wasn't a matter of these guys being in danger. There was danger for God's son, but he warned them in a dream, meaning he let them know in definite terms that they were to depart and go home a different way and not go back to Jerusalem and not tell Herod where the child was. It was important. Now, overnight, God sent an angel in a dream to tell Joseph to take Mary and Jesus and go down to Egypt. And they were there for a period of time. And then after Herod was dead, God told him that it was safe to go back into the land of Judea. But then in 22, look at Matthew 2:22. "But when he," Joseph, "heard that Archelaus did reign in Judea in the room of his father Herod, he was afraid to go thither, notwithstanding being warned of God," it's the kremetizo, "he was warned of God in a dream, he turned aside into the parts of Galilee." So God, in a dream, let him know, okay, don't go back to Bethlehem where you were, go to Galilee. They wound up going to Nazareth, where Mary and Joseph were originally from, and that's where they raised their son. Now, another interesting one is in Acts chapter 10. This is regarding Cornelius, chapter 10, verse 22. He had been praying to God, and an angel of God appeared to him and told him to send men to Joppa to bring Peter back to his house, and Peter would tell him things that God wanted him to know. In verse 22, the messengers that Cornelius sent to Peter told him this. They said, "Cornelius the centurion, a just or righteous man, and one that feareth God and of good report among all the nation of the Jews, was warned from God by an holy angel to send for thee into his house and to hear words of thee." Okay? So God sent this angel to warn him or to let him know this is something you need to do right now. When they were warned of God, it was like it's being instructed, given an order that they were to carry out right away. There's a few other places where that was used, but this should give us enough of an example to see what the word means. It's not always regarding danger, but it is something urgent that needs to be done so that God's will can be carried out. Now, it says that Noah was moved with fear. Look at that back in Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews 11, 7. "So he was warned of God of things not seen as yet." Okay? What were the things not seen as yet? Well, a flood to flood the whole world. This is something that actually had happened before in Genesis chapter 1. Remember, God created the heavens and the earth became without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep, meaning the whole earth was flooded with water. But no human being had seen that, okay, at least from Adam on, because Adam was formed, made, and created after that had happened. So from the days of Adam to the days of Noah, no one had ever seen the whole earth flooded like that. In fact, it's very likely that it had never actually rained, because if you remember in Genesis, where it talks about rain, look at Genesis chapter 2, verse 5. It says, "And every plant of the field before it was in the earth, and every herb of the field before it grew, for the Lord God had not caused it to rain upon the earth, and there was not a man to till the ground. But there went up a mist from the earth and watered the whole face of the ground." So at the time that Adam and Eve were in the garden, there was no rain, but there was a mist that would go up from the earth and it would water the whole face of the ground. It doesn't mention rain again until Genesis chapter 7. Verse 4, when God is speaking to Noah, and he said, "For yet 7 days, and I will cause it to rain upon the earth, 40 days and 40 nights. And every living substance that I have made will I destroy from off the face of the earth." So, you know, a flood like this was definitely not seen at all, but it's very likely that it had not rained. It just had this mist that would water the whole face of the ground. But God is now going to cause it to rain upon the earth. So he was warned of things not yet seen. You see that in Hebrews 11:7? And we'll go back there again. Might as well keep a bookmark in Hebrews 11:7 because we're going to go there a lot. Again, by faith, by believing Noah, being warned of God, being given urgent instructions of things not seen as yet, about it raining upon the earth for 40 days and 40 nights, moved with fear, okay? Moved with fear. Now, there's a word for fear called phobos, and a verb, phobeo. It's where we get the English word phobia from. It's not that word. It's the Greek word that is eulabeomai. It's an entirely different word from the normal word for fear. Now, the word fear in the Bible can mean reverence for God, respect for God, to the point where a person will hear what God has to tell him and do whatever God says, but out of loving respect, not so much as of being scared to death. But that word phobeo or phobos can mean the fear of being afraid for yourself. But this word has a different meaning. And it's, even though it's translated moved with fear, the word itself, there's a prefix, eu. And whenever you see eu on the beginning of a Greek word, it means good or well, okay? And labeomai is a form of the word lambano. So it's to be well taken or well received, meaning that when God told Noah about the things not seen as yet, that there's going to be a flood upon the earth and it's going to destroy all the people and animals that live on the face of the ground, he took that seriously, okay? He took it well and he took the appropriate action. That's what that word really means, to take that information well and to take the appropriate action. It's only used one other time, and it's an interesting place. It's in Acts chapter 23. If you go to Acts 23, and this has to do with the time that Paul the Apostle went to Jerusalem after God told him not to go multiple times, but he went anyway, and he got in trouble there, almost lost his life. Chapter 23, verse 10 is where this word for moved with fear. It's translated fearing in this verse. It says, and when there arose a great dissension, the chief captain, that's the Roman captain, fearing lest Paul should have been pulled in pieces of them, commanded the soldiers to go down and to take him by force from among them and to bring him into the castle or the compound. So there was such a great dissension regarding Paul. They were going to pull him in pieces. And this Roman captain, who had already realized that Paul was a Roman citizen, saw that he was going to be pulled in pieces of them. And he was fearing, not for himself, but he was very concerned about Paul. He was alarmed at what he saw, and he took decisive and appropriate action. He commanded his soldiers, go down and take him by force from those people that might actually kill him. So he took that action to rescue Paul. So it uses the word fearing, but it's not, he wasn't afraid for himself. He was just concerned about the situation and took decisive and quick action. So Noah, when he heard from God what God had planned regarding flooding the earth, he took immediate and decisive action. He immediately started in on the project that God gave him to do. It took him a while, I'm not sure exactly how long, but it would have taken a lot of years to build an ark of that size. Now, go back to Hebrews 11:7 one more time and see if there's anything else there we need to look at regarding Noah. But again, it says, by faith, by believing Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, moved with fear, prepared an ark to the saving of his house. So God is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. This would be in the reward category, right? In doing what God told him to do, he saved his household, his wife, his sons and their wives, and was able to repopulate the earth just from his family. So he prepared the ark to the saving of his house, by the which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness, which is by faith, by believing. So another thing we know about Noah is from 2 Peter chapter 2. If you'd look there, please. 2 Peter chapter 2. It's in verse 5. It talks about Noah. But we'll start in verse 4. It says, "For if God spared not the angels that sinned, but cast them down to hell," hell meaning a Tartarus, a place of confinement, "and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved unto judgment, and spared not the old world, but saved Noah, the eighth person," or he was one of eight that were saved, "a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood upon the world of the ungodly." So Noah was a preacher. We know that he was righteous himself, and we'll see that when we read the record in Genesis, but he was also a preacher of righteousness. He declared to others the righteousness of God, and apparently nobody listened to him because it was just himself and his family that were saved. But let's go to Genesis 7, Genesis chapter 7, and we'll see one of the places where it says that Noah was righteous. And to be righteous, by the way, doesn't mean that someone is necessarily amazing or impressing God by, you know, how great he is. It just means that it's the way he's supposed to be. To be righteous means that you're meeting the requirements that God gives, okay? Everybody should be righteous. Everyone should be doing the will of God. Everybody should be obeying God. Everybody should be on talking terms with God. And Noah was. But we'll see from verse 1 here that he was the only one in the whole world. Verse 1 says, "And the Lord said unto Noah, Come thou and all thy house into the ark, for thee have I seen righteous before me in this generation." Thee. Thee is singular, right? If it was ye, it would be you and your family. But it's just thee. So even Noah's family, his sons and his wife and his wife's sons, they were not necessarily righteous, but they got saved because of Noah, because he was righteous. He said, "Thee have I seen righteous before me in this generation." And Noah had other relations. We'll look at the genealogy in chapter 5. Everybody loves genealogies, right? But look at chapter 5. This gives the genealogy from Adam to Noah. And we're going to pick it up in verse 21 where it talks about Enoch. And Enoch's important because, as we saw last time we were together, that he was righteous, he was well-pleasing to God, and God did something very special for him. He translated or transferred him from one place to another so that he would not see death. And in verse 21, it says, "And Enoch lived 65 years and begat Methuselah. And Enoch walked with God." And that's an important statement, that he walked with God. In the Greek version of the Old Testament, it says he was well-pleasing to God in this verse. But Enoch walked with God after he begat Methuselah 300 years and begat sons and daughters. So he might not have been walking with God for the first 65 years of his life, but the last 300 of them, up until the point where he was translated or transferred, and he did die at some point after that, but during those 300 years, it says he walked with God, and he also begat other sons and daughters. And all the days of Enoch were 365 years, relatively short compared to the other ones that lived 800-900 years. "And Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him." Nobody found him, but God put him somewhere else. "And Methuselah lived 187 years and begat Lamech." And Methuselah lived after he begat Lamech 782 years and begat sons and daughters. And all the days of Methuselah were 969 years. And he died. "And Lamech lived 182 years and begat a son, and he called his name Noah." In the Hebrew, it's Noach, and it means rest, okay? His name means rest. "Called his name Noah, saying, This same shall comfort us concerning our work and toil of our hands because of the ground which the Lord hath cursed." Okay? So he named him Noah. Apparently, God showed him something about Noah when he was just born as a baby, and he gave him this very significant name, because he said, "This same shall comfort us
concerning our work and toil of our hands, because of the ground which the Lord hath cursed. Remember, after Adam disobeyed God, he said, cursed is the ground for thy sake. In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread. It would be very hard work to get things to grow out of the ground because the ground was cursed. Okay? And it says that he's going to comfort us. This little baby Noah is going to grow up and shall comfort us. And the word comfort is nacham. It's related to Noah, Noah's name. And it means to repent, to comfort, to ease oneself, also to regret something. But it's related to that word Noah. So if someone were to regret having done something, they would do something to ease that feeling of regret, okay? Or if someone was working in this ground that's been cursed and they got a break from that hard toil, you know, they get a breather from it. And we'll also learn more about the condition of the world, that some relief was needed from the things that were going on in the world at the time that Noah was born. But anyway, Lamech lived, after he begat Noah, 595 years and begat sons and daughters. So Lamech died 5 years before the flood, okay? Noah's father died 5 years before the flood. And all the days of Lamech were 707 years, and he died. Now, it's interesting that there was another one in the family that died the year of the flood. Which one was that? Oh, yeah, Methuselah. He died in the year of the flood. So I don't know if he died and then the flood started, or if he died in the flood. It doesn't really say. But the number of years that he lived and the year that he died matches up with the year of the flood. Now, remember, when God spoke to Noah, and it was in the year of the flood, his father had died. His grandfather may have just recently died. But he said, it's just thee, Noah, that I have found righteous before me. Now, verse 32 says, and Noah was 500 years old, and Noah begat Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Okay? He was 500 years old. Now, it doesn't say whether he was 500 when the first one was born or when the last one was born, or if they were triplets. Who knows? But it says he was 500 years old, and Noah begat Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now, in chapter 6, it says, it came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth, daughters were born unto them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men that they were fair, and they took them wives of all which they chose. Now, there's a theory, if you read the Companion Bible and E.W. Bullinger's notes, he says these were angels that came down in human form and cohabitated with humans and had children by them. I don't quite buy that, because the Word of God says everything reproduces after its kind, and angels are a different kind than human beings. So I don't think that's the case. But it does talk about Adam had Cain and he had Abel. Abel was righteous and Cain was, you know, the first murderer. And then Seth was born and was like Abel. Let's go back to chapter 4. Chapter 4, verse 25 says, and this is after the death of Abel, Adam knew his wife again, and she bare a son and called his name Seth. For God said, she hath appointed me another seed instead of Abel, whom Cain slew. And to Seth, to him also there was born a son, and he called his name Enos. Then began men to call upon the name of the Lord. But Seth kind of took Abel's place. He would have been the righteous one that believed God. So my best understanding of what was going on in chapter 6 is that the sons of God would be the ones that were faithful to God, that were believers, and the daughters of men would have been those that were going in the way of Cain. And they took them wives of all which they chose. So the believers for hundreds of years were sticking together and just marrying other believers. But then at this point, they realized, well, you know, these daughters of Cain's side of the family, they're really good looking. And they abandoned the standard of sticking with believers and just married whoever they wanted to. And this messed a lot of things up. And the Lord said, my spirit shall not always strive with man, for that he also is flesh. Was originally body, soul, and spirit. Now he's only body and soul. yet his days shall be 120 years. Now, the word man here is the word Adam, okay, which could mean Adam the individual or mankind, the descendants of Adam. In the Companion Bible, Bullinger says this is talking about Adam the individual, and that the point at which God said this was 120 years before Adam died. It could also mean that there would be 120 years between the time God said this and when all of mankind, with the exception of Noah and his family, would die. I don't know which one it is. I wish I did, but I just don't know. So that 120 years, I don't know exactly where that fits in. God is not saying this to Noah. He's just saying that as a statement at this point. In verse 4, it says, there were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bare children to them, the same became mighty men which were of old, men of renown. So these could have been giants that were very tall in stature. I've also heard that it could mean giants of wickedness, you know, the famous men, the big bullies, you might say. And God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And it repented, that's that word nacham, that's related to the name Noah. It repented the Lord that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him at his heart. But he came up with a plan that would relieve him of that grief that was being caused by these awful people. You know, he had made this man and woman. It was all very good in the beginning, and then they turned against him. And even the ones that were faithful to God for so many years just intermarried with the other ones. And it's just awful. Verse 6, it repented the Lord that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him at his heart. And the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast and the creeping thing and the fowls of the air, for it repenteth me that I have made them. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. This is a very significant verse. Why? Well, what are we studying? Diligently seeking God. It says Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. How do you find something? By seeking it, right? Remember Jesus Christ said, seek and you shall find, knock and it shall be opened unto you. In fact, he said, keep seeking and you shall find, keep knocking and it shall be opened unto you. There's some other verses that say the same thing, especially regarding God. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 4. Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 29. This is God telling Moses what to tell the people about what's going to happen to them down the road, that they will at some point turn from him and worship other gods, and that he would scatter them throughout the nations. But verse 29 says, but if from thence, where God has scattered the people of Israel, if from thence thou shalt seek the Lord thy God, thou shalt find him. If thou seek him with all thy heart and with all thy soul. Okay? So if the people would seek God with all their heart and with all their soul, they would find him. Right? Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Also look at Jeremiah 29. Jeremiah chapter 29. Let's start in verse 11. No, let's start in verse 10. This is talking about what's going to happen when the people of Judah would be taken captive by the Babylonians and they would be scattered throughout the Babylonian Empire. He said, for thus saith the Lord, that after 70 years be accomplished at Babylon, I will visit you and perform my good word toward you in causing you to return to this place. For I know the thoughts that I think toward you, saith the Lord, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you an expected end. Then shall ye call upon me, and ye shall go and pray unto me, and I will hearken unto you. And ye shall seek me, verse 13, and find me, when you shall search for me with all your heart. Okay, this goes right along with Deuteronomy chapter 4 that we read. If you seek me with all your heart, then you're going to find me. Now, Noah was one that found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Let's go back to Genesis chapter 6, where we read that. And it's in verse 8. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. The rest of the world, they abandoned God. The rest of the world, they were just doing what they wanted to do, and the earth was filled with violence. You know, the ground was cursed. It was very hard to get crops to grow. I'm sure a lot of them thought, instead of working that hard, I'll just rob the people that are working hard and take it from them. And people were just robbing each other, killing each other. The earth was filled with violence. And God was so, it said it repented him that he had made man upon the earth. And then he came up with a plan to relieve that grief that he had. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. He must have been looking. He must have been seeking God's grace, okay? To seek God's favor. He cared about God. He loved God. And it says, these are the generations of Noah. Noah was a just or righteous man and perfect in his generations. And Noah walked with God, again, the only one. And Noah begat three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. The earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. It's terrible right now. We had how many mass shootings within the past couple of days? It's terrible right now, but it was even worse then. He couldn't have a fellowship like we are right now, where we have a dozen or so people that are concerned about the Word of God and wanting to learn about God. Noah had nobody. The earth was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. And God looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt. For all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth. And God said unto Noah, now God's talking to him here, okay? God said unto Noah, the end of all flesh is come before me. For the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Make thee an ark of gopher wood. I don't know what kind of wood gopher wood is. One guess here says it could be cypress. But make thee an ark of gopher wood. Rooms shalt thou make in the ark, and shalt pitch it within and without with pitch. And this is the fashion which thou shalt make it of. The length of the ark shall be 300 cubits. That's like 450 feet long. The breadth of it 50 cubits, that's like 75 feet wide, and the height of it 30 cubits, that's 45 feet tall. A window shalt thou make to the ark, and in a cubit shalt thou finish it above, and the door of the ark shalt thou set in the side thereof, with lower, second, and third stories shalt thou make it. And behold, I do bring a flood of waters upon the earth. He said, I'm going to be the one causing this to happen, to destroy all flesh. God has the right to do that. Created the whole place, right? But he's very kind to save that one man and his family so the earth could be repopulated. And his promise about the seed of the woman crushing the head of the serpent could still be fulfilled. If he didn't do this, Noah himself may have been snuffed out. And there would have been nobody to carry on the Christ line. But he said, behold, I do bring a flood of waters upon the earth to destroy all flesh, wherein is the breath of life from under heaven, and everything that is in the earth shall die. That means on the land. But with thee, just you, singular, will I establish my covenant, and thou shalt come into the ark, thou and thy sons and thy wife and thy sons' wives with thee. There'd be eight of them. And of every living thing of all flesh, two of every sort shalt thou bring into the ark to keep them alive with thee. They shall be male and female. That was wise. Of fowls after their kind, and of cattle after their kind, of every creeping thing of the earth after his kind, two of every sort shall come unto thee to keep them alive. And take thou unto thee of all food that is eaten, and thou shalt gather it to thee, and it shall be for food for thee and for them. Thus did Noah, according to all that commanded him, so did he. This is where, remember, Hebrews 11:7 said it was by faith that Noah did these things. Thus did Noah, according to all that God commanded him, so did he. That's believing, okay? He believed what God said. He acted upon it. He carried it out exactly as God told him to. Let's look at chapter 7. And the Lord said unto Noah, come thou, Noah, and all thy house into the ark, for thee, just you singularly, have I seen righteous before me in this generation. Of every clean beast thou shalt take to thee by sevens. by sevens. So there would be 14 of each clean beast, seven males, seven females, okay? And the clean beasts were the ones that could be eaten and the ones that could be offered to God as a sacrifice. So of every clean beast shalt thou take to thee by sevens, the male and his female, and of beasts that are not clean by two, the male and his female. Of fowls also of the air by sevens, the male and the female, to keep seed alive upon the face of all the earth. So there'd be seven pairs of every kind of bird. For yet 7 days, and I will cause it to rain upon the earth, 40 days and 40 nights, and every living substance that I have made will I destroy from off the face of the earth. And Noah did according to all that the Lord commanded him. What a great man. Just followed the instructions. And you'd think perhaps God gave him some wisdom as far as how to physically carry this out, that those things aren't written here. But he did everything God commanded him to do. And Noah was 600 years old when the flood of waters was upon the earth. But must have been a very strong 600-year-old guy. And Noah went in, and his sons and his wife and his sons' wives with him, into the ark because of the waters of the flood. And they knew that the waters were coming, not because of AccuWeather, but because God told them, on this day it's going to start to rain. You see? He did everything by the word of God. Of clean beasts and of beasts that were not clean, and of the fowls and of everything that creepeth upon the earth, there went in two and two unto Noah into the ark, the male and the female, as God had commanded Noah. It doesn't say he had to go out and rustle them up. They just came to him. So God must have spoken to those animals and instructed them, and the right ones came. And it came to pass after 7 days that the waters of the flood were upon the earth. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th day of the month, the same day were all the fountains of the great deep broken up, and the windows of heaven were opened. So waters came in that were somehow outside the earth. They came upon the earth. How God did that, I don't know, but I'm looking forward to seeing the replay maybe when we get to the gathering. I'm hoping God just shows us all these things because I'm very curious. And the rain was upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights. In the selfsame day entered Noah and Shem and Ham and Japheth, the sons of Noah, and Noah's wife, the three wives of his sons with them, who are not named, into the ark. They and every beast after his kind, and all cattle after their kind, and every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth after his kind, and every fowl after his kind, every bird of every sort. And they went in unto Noah into the ark, two and two of all flesh, wherein is the breath of life. And they that went in male and female of all flesh, as God had commanded him, and the Lord shut him in. So God shut the door and sealed it, so the water could not get in, and no other people could get in either. And the flood was 40 days upon the earth, and the waters increased and bare up the ark, and it was lift up above the earth, and the waters prevailed and were increased greatly upon the earth, and the ark went upon the face of the waters. And the waters prevailed exceedingly upon the earth, and all the high hills that were under the whole heaven were covered. 15 cubits upward did the waters prevail, and the mountains were covered. And all flesh died that moved upon the earth, both of fowl and of cattle and of beast and of every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth, and every man, all in whose nostrils was the breath of life, of all that was in the dry land, died. And every living substance was destroyed which was upon the face of the ground, both man and cattle and the creeping things and the fowl of the heaven, and they were destroyed from the earth. And Noah only remained alive, and they that were with him in the ark. And the waters prevailed upon the earth 150 days. Now we're getting to the end of our hour here. But I did want to point out that Noah sent out the raven and the dove to check whether the ground was dry. And it was a while. They were in the ark a total of 1 year and 10 days. Because verse 13 says, it came to pass in the 601st year, in the first month, the first day of the month, the waters were dried from off the earth, and Noah removed the covering of the ark, and look and behold, the face of the ground was dry. And in the second month, on the 27th day of the month, was the earth dried. completely dried. And God spake unto Noah, saying, Go forth of the ark, thou and thy wife and thy sons' wives with thee. So Noah did not leave the ark until God talked to him and told him it's time to leave. They were in that ark a whole year and 10 days, because the 600th year of his life on the second month, 17th day of the month, until the 601st year, second month, 27th day of the month. So a year and 10 days. So God told him to go forth of the ark, thou and thy wife and thy sons' wives with thee. Bring forth with thee every living thing that is with thee, of all flesh, of the fowl and of cattle, and of every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth, that they may breed abundantly in the earth, and be fruitful and multiply upon the earth. We'll just read a few more. And Noah went forth, and his sons and his wife and his sons' wives with him. Every beast, every creeping thing, and every fowl, and whatsoever creepeth upon the earth after their kinds went forth out of the ark. And Noah builded an altar unto the Lord, and took of every clean beast, and of every clean fowl, and offered burnt offerings on the altar. So the first thing he did after he got out was he honored God with a burnt offering. You know, these were the only animals that could be eaten, but rather than hoard them to himself, he offered them to God. So it would have been the domestic animals that he could take care of, and the birds. He let the birds fly away, but there were certain birds that could be eaten, like quail and things like that. But he offered some to God. And the Lord smelled a sweet savor. It smelled good to him. He accepted it, like he did with Abel's offering. And the Lord said in his heart, I will not again curse the ground any more for man's sake, for the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I again smite any more everything living as I have done. While the earth remaineth, seed time and harvest, and cold and heat, and summer and winter, and day and night shall not cease. That was a wonderful promise that he made. So we're going to stop here, but we see that Noah was a man that was righteous before God. He just did what he was expected to do. He listened to God. He believed in God, and he believed what God told him. He was the only man that God could talk with upon the face of the whole earth, and he told him what he was planning to do. He told Noah what he needed to do. It was important for God to save this one man and his family so that his promise could come to pass that he promised about the promised seed of the woman. And Noah was obedient. He had his ears open to God. He heard everything that God said. He carried it out completely, exactly. And because of Noah, we're all here today, because every one of us, we're all descendants of Noah. Okay, not only of Adam, we're all descendants of Noah. Every nation upon the earth to this day can trace their roots back to Noah. So we're very thankful for him. And next week, I'll just share a little bit more about him, and then we'll look at Abraham and the things that he did by believing and how he sought after God. Okay?